Good to see you all. I want to welcome you to the Thursday, April 23rd meeting of the A&F committee. I'm going to be chairing this meeting for our regular chair. She is delayed flying into San Diego, I believe. I want to welcome Director Ayala, the newest member to our A&F committee, Jimmy. Jimmy's from the city of San Diego. He's been on the board for a long time, and he's welcome aboard, Jimmy. Thank you. Did you want to say a few words or? Okay. Okay. We have a board member participating remotely. Is that Mr.
Yes, Director Abdullahi will be participating remotely.
And also
pursuant to the just,
Miller. Also,
I don't believe he's on this committee.
Not for this committee. Okay.
Pursuant to the just cause exception to the Brown Act.
Yes. So let's take a roll.
Chair Abdullahi.
Present.
Vice Chair Rant.
Here.
Vice Chair Kirschbaum.
Here.
Directors Acosta. Ayala.
Here.
Douglas.
Here.
So we're going to do what?
Hilliker. Morrison. Norman.
Here.
Whalen.
Here.
Robeck. Sanchez. Serrano. Williams.
Here.
Vice Chair Rant, you have a quorum of the committee.
Thank you very much. Since we have a remote director, our votes will be by roll call today. And so we'll move forward. As always, as we discuss the items on the agenda, I will be calling directors who push their speaker button. Please limit your comments to issues and matters not already addressed and state your points when you have a chance to speak so we can move through our agenda. Are there any additions to the agenda?
There are none.
Okay. Do we have any public comments, either in present or online?
Calling on public comment for matters on the A&F agenda or within the jurisdiction of the committee. If there are public speakers online, please raise your hand through the Zoom app or press star 9 if listening by phone. I see none.
Okay, thank you. Chair's report, I have one great item to report, and that is that the Water Authority has again received the Government Finance Officer Association Award for Achievement of Excellence in Financial Reporting for their annual comprehensive financial report. This is the 26th year in a row that the Water Authority has received it. It says that this organization has met the highest standards for fiscal and financial reporting. And congratulations. Thank you very much. Okay. Do I have any director's comments from the committee members? Okay. Consent calendar. We have one item on the consent calendar, and that is the monthly treasurer's report. Are there any questions or comments? Okay. Do I have a motion and a second to approve Director Ayala? I need a second. Director Norman? Okay, we've moved in second. Nicole, would you call roll, please?
Chair Abdullahi? Chair Abdullahi? Vice Chair Rant?
Yes.
Vice Chair Kirschbaum?
Yes.
Costa is absent. Ayala?
Yes.
Douglas?
Yes.
Hilliker's absent. Morrison. Norman?
Yes.
Whalen?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Item on the consent calendar passed.
Thanks, Nicole. Okay, under action, discussion, and presentation, we have one presentation today, an important one nonetheless. Mr. Rosnam, our financial planning manager, will provide us an update on the development of the calendar year 2027 rates and charges. Go ahead, Pierce.
Thank you, Chair Arant. Good morning, everyone. Happy to be here. This continues our series of rate updates on the development process of the CY27 rates and charges. Today's presentation is really just going to focus on the factors that are really impacting the 27 rates themselves, as well as the roadmap. As you may be aware from our past practices, rates are always set on an annual basis. We only set 1 year of rates, but to provide kind of input and guidance and a understanding of what's ahead, we provide a roadmap to give you a little bit more context of the decision you're making on what's right in front of you. The primary impacts for 27 are going to be water sales and purchase assumptions. That's always a big factor here, but we have some important updates on things that are materializing there. We have a budget and financial needs that I'll be touching on briefly, as well as Metropolitan last week adopted their rates, and we have some rate design implications that we wanted to discuss before we bring any rates to the board next month. The first piece is the water sales and purchase assumptions. As you're well aware, we've had a very good month in terms of announcing two water deals with third parties. That's two deals, 21-year deals. And then what you may not be aware of is each of your member agencies provide us a forecast of what they anticipate water sales or purchases to be at their agency. And we've have new numbers to share on that. The first piece is the water deals. What's really beneficial here is it provides cost sharing and flexibility. The best way to view these water deals is that they are new off-takers of the water. Water still has to be purchased. So just think of this as we're selling 20,000 more acre feet of water, and we've got a guaranteed commitment for the next 21 years. So where detachment, we lost about 20,000 acre feet of sales. Here we're gaining 20,000 acre feet of sales. Now we're going to ramp into this a little bit. So in calendar 26, it's not quite 20,000 acre feet. We've been talking about that. Ramps up slowly over the next couple of years. And then we also have prepaid water purchases. Those prepaid water purchases, they will send us the funds for the prepaid water. And those funds will have to sit in our coffers. Now, that will improve our liquidity, that improves our days of cash, but it really should be held until that service of providing that prepaid water is completed. Otherwise, we no longer have the funds to provide that future liability. And what's important to understand here in terms of these water deals is that we are still incurring costs. It's not just revenue that's coming in. These are water sales. We have to provide the water. That water cost will continue to be incurred. We are years ahead of schedule on this. It used to be a concern that once local supply development came on, we would be buying water that we had no off-taker for. As you'll see in the next slide, we are above contractual obligations even prior to the third-party water deals. But before we go into that, I want to ask our controller to come up and give a little bit more insight on this prepaid conversation and how that impacts not only the budget, but the actual accounting side of things.
Thank you, Pierce. Good morning. I'm Chris Wojcik, the controller. And I just have one quick slide to talk about the accounting treatment for these new transactions with our new customers. Now, the first one is the main sale of water. This is rather similar to how we handle sales of water with our member agencies. So we will be receiving requests for water. We will deliver that water. We will be paid for that water. And that will allow us to recognize the revenue. So again, the delivery of that water allows us to recognize the revenue. That's in compliance with GAAP or generally accepted accounting principles. We will also be receiving some prepayments from those agencies for water to be delivered at a future date, an unknown date. And so we will be invoicing those agencies according to the contracts, the agreements that we have in place. They will be paying us for that. They will be paying us in accordance with the agreements. We will not be recognizing the revenue again because we have not delivered that water. That will happen at a later date. Instead, we're going to be recording a liability on our books for the amount of the prepayments. Now, the cash itself that we will be receiving, we're going to be depositing that into a reserve fund, a brand new reserve that we're creating, and it's going to be called the Prepaid Water Program Reserve Fund. Now, as you know, in the controller's report on the last page, there's a table that shows all of the cash and investments of the Water Authority and also describes and the reserves and also describes the purpose and the definition for them. So in about 2 months, you'll see our new fund called the Prepaid Water Program Reserve Fund show up with monies being deposited. Now, at a future date, the agencies will request that water. We will deliver it to them, and then we will recognize that revenue because the earnings transaction is complete. The liability itself will go down, and we'll actually be able to move monies from that reserve fund into the operating fund. Now, these are unique transactions for us. They're new. They're material. We did share the agreements already with our auditors to take a look at them. They did reaffirm the accounting treatment I've just spoken on. They did leave us with one word, and we included that in the presentation, being prudent. And that it would be prudent not to spend these monies before we deliver the water. It'd be prudent not to spend these monies before we complete the earnings cycle. And so that was a key takeaway we wanted to make sure that we communicated. Okay, there's after. Okay. If you have any questions on the accounting, I'd be happy to answer.
Oh, I just had a quick one. What does the GAAP acronym stand for?
Yes, I'm sorry, Generally Accepted Accounting Principles.
Thank you. Director Myers.
Thank you. I'm not a member of this committee. Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you for that short, but I think important presentation about how this money is going to be booked, because I think it's important for us to recognize that even though we've made these exchange deals and that there's money coming in, it doesn't mean that there's this big free pot of money available. I think what I'm hearing from you is that we have to book that as a future, liability, is that the right word? Asset, you're right, asset. And that we need to hold on to that. I'm assuming this reserve fund will this be interest bearing? And what in that 2-3% range that we are, however the market is there, so we'll get a little bit of interest on that. When you say that it's prudent not to use the cash until the water is delivered, I don't know. This is maybe too hypothetical of a question, but as we're going through the rate process and there's different numbers being thrown around in terms of what the rate should be. Is there a point where, from an accounting point of view, you can tell us that we're not being prudent, that we're maybe pulling money unnecessarily or too quickly out of these reserves or out of these funds? Or is there a way for us to gauge or measure this so that we as board members know if we're being prudent or not at a particular time?
And thank you for the question. It's a good one. I think we're too early in being able to really respond to that. We'd have to see what the expenses are going to be for in developing the rate cycle. So I think it's for me to respond to it a little bit too early. Let me defer to Pierce. Maybe he can respond a little bit more.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Good comment in terms of that. I think, as we've said before, during rate setting processes in general, budget process, long range plan, we like to take a holistic approach. And so this will definitely be an opportunity for us to incur the cash, but this specific kind of pot, we want to kind of informally restrict for the purpose of being able to address that future liability. But when we take a look at the whole picture, I think what we'll be looking at is what does this allow us to do? What do the additional reserves that we have in mind? And so when we talk about kind of that 150 days of cash threshold, this will be part of that package. And it's just gonna be one of the various reserves, but we certainly want to make sure that money that's in that new reserve stays within that reserve for the intended purpose.
If I just have one more follow-up, thank you. How will we see this new reserve in our package? Is this going to be a separate?
It'll be in the controller's report every month.
Okay,
so Chris is creating a new table, and you'll see that new line item, and we'll point it out maybe at the first time that it's shown, so you can see it.
Now, I'm assuming since this is new, we don't have a board policy on. A specific board policy on the handling, like a minimum or a maximum or anything like that. Is that something that, at least in theory, could be done for there to be some kind of recognition? If I guess where I'm getting at is, I think it would be important for the board to know if at times that fund is maybe below or is being pressured in a way that we know that we're not keeping the balance at a level that is going to meet the future costs. How do we do that? And is there the possibility of, would a board policy be something that would be potentially there, or would there be some other way to do that?
I think I want to defer to our general manager.
Yeah. So my thought on that is that I would fully anticipate not touching the money. It's a future liability, so I think that we need to have it there in reserves. I say that, but also would recognize the interest earnings that the account will accrue. And so if there is a policy that would need to be developed, I'd say that it would be probably focused solely around that.
Okay. Thank you.
Director Plessy.
Plessy. Thank you.
Thank you. I too am not on the committee, so I do appreciate the wanting to comment and ask a question. My questions were along the lines that Director Myers just mentioned. It was more about the reserve and what type, and would we be making money on that? But there was something in your presentation, Pierce, that I'd like a little bit more attention to. And being that I'm a new board member and trying to understand a lot of what we're dealing with is from the past of decisions of 20 years ago, when I believed we had 24 members in our member agency, and now we have 22 members in our member agency. And those two member agencies that were detached a few years ago created kind of a big unsettling, rumbling effect through our finances. So this now is not a waterfall, but maybe more of a holistic back to our 24 members, because they are now offsetting what that detachment would have taken. So this isn't really a windfall of money, but really more of, okay, now we are back to kind of, we plug the hole in the ship. We're no longer a sinking ship. Can we just now steady the ship and see where we go as we face another iceberg that might be coming at us from maybe oil or things that are not within our control? And how can we sort of, make things a little bit more smoother when we have rough waters coming ahead? So I want to really, can you explain to us how that is a little bit more in detail? I know you brushed over it a little bit in your presentation, but I think that is something that, if that is explained a little bit clearly, that this is not a windfall of money, but it's really kind of just making us whole from what has happened over the past few years.
Sure, Director Flessy, I think your question really is aligned with the new business model that the general managers are working on. And I think that's the holistic approach under the leadership of the general managers to give us direction on how do we holistically look at this new revenue stream. So I would like to just defer to our assistant general manager, COO Tish, if you want to elaborate a little bit.
I appreciate the pointing out of the new revenue being more of bringing back to a normal from when we had 24 member agencies and the water sales associated with those. And we can definitely reflect that in future presentations to show where we were compared to where we are now. And to share what the CFO mentioned with regard to the business model process, that has to do particularly if we have any excess revenues and recommendations to the board, should that happen. Right now, we are not looking at excess revenues. We are looking at encumbered revenues that are associated with future water sales. And as staff mentioned, following general accepted accounting practices, those will be encumbered to make sure that we have the money to buy the water we need to sell to our new partners when they request it. Thank you.
Director Paul.
Thank you. I also am not a member of this committee, so I appreciate the opportunity to comment. So I think when we first heard about prepayment, we at least in my mind, it was paying in advance for 3 years worth of water. And so we would collect the money, and then over 3 years, we'd ship the water. And then that's not really how this has played out. So we're going to provide every year, they're going to pay for the water they use every year. What is the schedule? When do we expect them to use the water that they're prepaying for?
It's the short answer is it's not going to come in the next 3 or 4 years. It's probably going to be within a 10-year period. That, remember, we just entered into a 21-year agreement, right. And it'll largely be probably tied to hydrology, to be quite honest with you. So predicting that is, as you know, difficult.
Right. So is it my understanding that if they use in a particular year, they want to use more than the 10,000, that will come from the prepaid money?
That's correct.
Thank you. I don't know that that's clear for the public. I think they think we got this money in advance for water we're going to sell in the next 3 years. That's why I brought it up at the last meeting. I don't think the public understands that. Thank you.
I think one thing I'll add to that is just for consideration in the prepayment for water discussion is that was largely, if not solely, tied to the unit price that we negotiated with them. In exchange for that upfront payment over 3 to 4 years, we were able to bring down the price point, because without it, we would have negotiated something much higher.
Director Kirschbaum.
Thank you. So I just want to say that I support staff's recommendation to not use the cash until the water is delivered. And I just would like to take that a step further and say, let's not use the cash until we have the new business model from the general manager's meetings. That's all. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Director Castaneda.
Thank you very much. I'm neither not a member of this committee, but you know, we're talking about a lot of stuff, you know, and I appreciate the price point for the folks that we're selling water to. What about the price point for our customers? Are we going to be able to see, you know, and I've heard a lot of, you know, technical jargon here. Are we going to be able to see a real slowdown of rate increases that we can pass on to our customers? We have to pass on to our customers. And are we going to see it in the rate package that's coming forth?
Yeah, so I can answer that, Pierce. So I'll go back to January, prior to when we started, or when we brought forward the transfers to the board. At that point in time, we had a rate ramp that we looked at in our long-range financing plan that was order of magnitude 4 to 8%, right? In the short term, you saw the 4 to 8. When you got to 2035, we were in double digits to account for Pure Water Phase 2 coming online in full form. Everything that we've just approved with Eastern and Western will materially bring down all of those numbers. So how it relates to the rate increases, here's what I would say, is that all of your agencies have presumably planned for something much higher from the Water Authority based on our long-range financing plan. That's unique to each agency. It's unique to each 218 process. But in a sense, agencies have been planning for higher rate increases at the Water Authority. We are now going to come in May and bring that rate ramp down. How it impacts the end user, that's at the retail level, and I think that that's unique to each member agency. So it'll be up to each agency as to how that flows through their own financials.
And I think you answered my question, but I'm specifically talking about the cost of water from this agency to the retailers. I'm not talking about how we individually treat it at our own boards. But what I'm saying is, what I'm kind of hearing, what I've been seeing in presentations is that we're going to see that ramp down, as you put it, soon, and not when we deliver all the water, you know, 10 years from now. So that's what I, you know, that it's a very simple equation for me. You know, I mean, are we going to see some rate? I don't want to say relief because that's a misnomer. Are we going to see a slower escalation or a lower escalation of water rates from this agency to its customers?
Short answer is yes. And that's what you'll see in May. And we'll have a couple options for you. And the extent to which we stick to a staff recommendation or some variation of it will determine what that rate ramp looks like.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Director Funk Sakai.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not on the committee, so I appreciate the opportunity to speak. I don't know if you would have the answers to this, but having served on the board at Metropolitan Water District, I think that the board up there made a decision to do something that's somewhat similar, but not exactly the same with their reverse cyclic program where they're pre-selling the water. So we did ask whether the money that was that Metropolitan would receive could be put into separate accounts. And we were told at that time that, and I'm hoping I'm understanding correctly, that they could not put it in a separate account because Metropolitan operates with an enterprise fund situation. So I'm not sure whether you're aware of the differences. And I am glad to see that if we are able to separate our money out from these water sales into the prepaid water program reserve fund, and that we are planning to not use the cash until the water is delivered, I am happy to see that. But
yeah, I don't know any reason why the Metropolitan would be precluded from setting up a separate fund account. I mean, the enterprise department is usually a department that's within a bigger entity, and MWD is a separate JPA just like we are. And so I don't understand how they could be precluded.
I'll just add to that, okay. Director Fong Sakai. I think it's that, and I don't mean to put words into Met staff's mouth, their CFO, but I think that their reluctance to do it offers them greater flexibility. I think what you heard from Chris earlier is that we will have an informal policy, I think is what you said, to not touch that. I don't know if I'm putting words into your mouth now, Chris, but it will be a separate, or maybe Pierce said it, it will be a separate fund. And we are making the commitment in this boardroom to not touch the money, where I think that Met is looking for maximum flexibility with all pooled funds.
Chris, it looks like you have something you'd like to say.
Yes, we do operate as an enterprise fund similar to Metropolitan Water District. We did look at that. What could we do with this money to maybe place it differently? We looked into setting up potentially an escrow account. But usually with an escrow account, there's usually two signatories on that, and there are requirements to add monies and take monies out. There are no requirements from the two agencies to have set up an escrow account. We looked at setting up maybe a trust account. Maybe that's something would be helpful there too. It would be it wouldn't be helpful to the Water Authority to set up a trust account to put these monies in it. They're still in the Water Authority's money in our name. We could still draw those monies at any time. So we fell back to the reserve. We thought the reserve would be the most appropriate. It's we set up a new reserve fund for it. It'll be transparent. It'll be showing on the controller's report. We can certainly put the board can put guardrails on it surrounding how the monies can be added and taken out. But we just thought we'd be better served with a reserve fund internally.
Okay. No, I appreciate that the stance that we're taking, and it sounds like I need to have a conversation with some of Met's finance staff. Thank you.
Director Heiderman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not a part of the committee, but I completely agree with Director Kirschbaum's point of view. I think it's sound accounting practice, and I think the real test is going to be for this board to have the discipline to control themselves and not want to spend that before we actually deliver the water. And whether that's an informal policy or formal policy, I just think it's important that we you know, process good government hygiene. So thank you.
Any other questions or comments? When this news first broke, I was concerned that it seemed to be interpreted by the media that this would result in immediate reduction in water rates, which is not correct. Where this benefits the Water Authority is if you go out in time and you see the demand being projected to drop down, especially in about 2035, when pure water comes online and you're projecting 230,000 acre feet of water demand. If we weren't able to accomplish these transactions, you'd still be paying for 319,000 acre feet of water. And these transactions, what they do, and hopefully we can do more up to the 50,000, and maybe we have some City of Scottsdale may be interested in some desal water, as I read this morning in the paper. As we go forward in time and transfer these obligations, our supply gets closer to our demand, which is key to the long-term benefit that these transactions are going to provide. So, as I understand it, I may be wrong, but that's how I see it. And so, I think the staff has expressed it pretty well, and I think the guardrails they will put on that money are important, and we can't get silly and not think about the long runs, the long term. So any other questions or comments? Pearson, thank you so much. I think we're through. You still have more?
Still have more.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I appreciate the dialogue and the support on that process. So we will look to formalize that as we go through the rest of this process. Continuing on the other part of kind of the supply side of water purchases, I mentioned the demand survey that we had from the member agencies. What you have up on the screen is a complicated graphic, but it's quite simple in its takeaway, is that regional demand is staying relatively flat, local supplies are dropping, and therefore member agencies are rolling back onto the Water Authority. So the demand on the Water Authority is higher than it had been previously forecasted in prior surveys. When you take a look at the graphic, it's not just a one-year event. You can see all the way at the bottom there, the orange line, the dashed line represented the prior forecast. The solid line represents the new forecast. And what you see is that solid orange line is notably lower than the original dashed line. That gap that is made between those two lines is new demand on the Water Authority. And it's not just a 1 year, but it's something that we look to not get back to where the original forecast was until 2030. 2030 is also the first time that the demand profile would look to fall below the contractual obligations that are now then reflected of the third-party water deals that were just signed. So huge progress has been made. As I mentioned, we're kind of ahead of the game with these early third-party deals. As has been mentioned, we haven't even had the ability to do these deals for over a year now. And so being able to execute these is really helpful for that roadmap, for that long-term progression of rates. When we move to the next item, which is kind of financial impacts on the budget side, not too many updates to share. Leanna will be here in a little bit in the next several months to present the midterm budget updates. But what's really being reflected there and will be reflected in the new rates will be the new labor agreement that is coming to the board's way soon. We will also be updating the budget numbers based on updated water sales information and water purchases, as well as the third-party deals, and then updates around the projected debt expense. As you may recall, one of the prior rate adoptions by the board was to pay off some debt with any funds in excess of our coverage requirement. So in February, we paid off $17 million in commercial paper. That $17 million was not budgeted. And so that's one item in particular that will be coming across on the budget. We are looking to continue that debt service later this fall, the new one. And while the new money has been included in the budget, just a reminder that any savings from the refundings that have been authorized, we won't know what those refunding savings look like until we actually go to market, whether those refundings materialize or not. So they are not being included in the new budget nor in the rates. Turning our attention to the final piece of this is the MWD component and our rate design. Staying here with our rate design, we've got the permanent special ag water rate. I mentioned this last month. In order to maintain the historical discount level that the board was seeking when we adopted this methodology, we're looking at about $3 million of property tax or non-rate revenue to maintain that discount. And that is what was kind of authorized and pre-approved by the board. So just as we committed to, we would define what that amount was. If that $3 million goes away or is reduced, then that discount that's offered to the PSAR participants would be reduced in kind. Metropolitan last week adopted their rates and charges. They do a two-year budget process along with a two-year rate setting window. They adopted 27 rates and 28 rates. They're looking at a 6.2% rate adjustment, which is maybe lower than you heard, kind of the original whisper numbers of 9.5%, almost 10%. The reason in big part that they were able to get down to 6.2 is they raised property taxes. That is not calculated as part of the increase on rates and charges. So there's a 22% increase on their property tax assessment. And so they're generating a lot more revenue there that offsets the needs of rates and charges. When we, throughout this whole process, we've got a fixed exchange schedule. We're not buying much metropolitan water. So why does metropolitan matter? We still buy a lot of treated demand from Metropolitan. We have them treat our QSA supplies. We treat nearly 40,000, 50,000 acre feet of that water through Metropolitan. There are increases associated with treatment. They also have a new treatment fixed charge. And so on your member agency's bills, you will see a new allocation associated with that. So as we do Met's existing fixed charges, their readiness to serve charge and capacity reservation charge, we receive a bill from Metropolitan and we directly pass that through, no admin fee, nothing, just a direct reallocation of that pass through to the member agencies in kind to how it's incurred to the Water Authority. So the RTS is a 10-year rolling average. So we assess each of the member agencies on a 10-year rolling average. For the new charges, for treatment, we're looking to do the same thing. So there's three separate components that make up about a $10.5 million fixed charge to the Water Authority. So we will look to allocate that to the member agencies in a similar vein to how it's incurred to the Water Authority. And so on the right-hand side of the table, you'll see pass-through methodology. We're looking at seven-year averages. Either it's max annual, so kind of your peak on the system in the last 7 years, which is exactly how Metropolitan will apply it to us, max minus average, which again, Metropolitan does to us, or again, maximum. And so that will be a new fixed charge that removes about $10.5 million off the volumetric side of things, but $10.5 million being shifted by Metropolitan onto the fixed side of the equation. The final piece here is now with this information, with all these factors, a lot has been changing and shifting As you can imagine, staff will come with a recommendation to this board in May. So in your board packet, you will see a draft cost of service report. That draft cost of service report will have a staff recommendation in the board, and that will just reflect calendar 27. In the board memo, we will outline the roadmap and we will talk about the picture and what that looks like more holistically than just kind of the cost of service viewpoint of 27 rates and charges. What we're looking to do is what we've heard from this board for many years now, whether it's been through rate work groups, the long-range financing plan process, or rates and budget. The priority for this rate roadmap is going to be stability and predictability. We want to preserve the financial strength and flexibility of this organization, and we want to maintain system uptime. We want to be able to deliver the water that you're paying for. We want to make sure that we have the supplies, that we have the ability for those pipes to deliver the water. And I say this because there are any number of ways when you look at rates in a one-year snapshot that we can design the rates, that we can maneuver the rates if you're only looking in a single snapshot. But what the promise here is for you is we want to not just think of next year, because we know that while staff changes, while the board changes, the mission of this organization is long-term predictability and sustainability. And so the rates that will be forthcoming will reflect that. So with that, that concludes the presentation. And if there are additional questions, we're happy to ask.
Director Myers.
Thank you again for the opportunity. If we could go to slide six, the demand curves, I think are interesting. One question is, do these new demand numbers that we've received from the agencies move us above take or pay at this point?
Yes, they do. You can see the blue numbers are just simply demands on the water authority by the member agencies. So you can see for 26, we were at 327. We look to sell 323,000 acre feet next year. So that is north of the pre-third party deal contractual obligations. That dashed red line that you see that is kind of at the 320,000 acre foot level for 25 and dips for 26, that reflects the third party water deals. And so we are now, you know, close to 30,000 acre feet north of the contractual obligation number when you do consider third party obligations.
I'm trying to decide. So the middle graph with the dashed and dot, is that the take or pay line?
The broken red dashed line is the take or pay line.
Okay, so what this is showing is that we're now looking at 2029 when we start projecting to dip below.
Yeah, it's right at that number where it's basically break even in 29, and then in 2030 would be the first year we'd be below.
Okay, thank you. And then just really curiosity, is there any predominant agency or agencies, maybe this is more of a question for water planning people, that move this curve significantly?
Since he's here sitting in the audience, I will pull
sorry,
him
Jeremy.
No, thank you for the question. The biggest change that's driving this is actually a reduction in the use of surface water. So coming up back, you know, after back-to-back wet years, all of our regional reservoirs filled up. Our member agencies have been aggressively using those over the last 2 years. And now the forecast we have coming in from staff from member agencies is that we're down at low limits in our pools now. So we're not forecasting to be able to use as much. So even though these new local supply projects are coming online, their use of surface water, which is their normal every year use, is much lower. So it's sort of offsetting that reduction on the demand on the water authority. So that's what's really changed from last year to this year in terms of the total demand on the water authority.
Okay, thank you.
Director Heidemann.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Pierce. So one of the other benefits of the settlement agreement with Metropolitan was the ability to receive QSA water at different times based on our demand or our demand profile. So will we see a meaningful relief on our expenses, and when will we see that? How, what will that look like?
So we're already experiencing that benefit now. If you may recall, last June, when we were trying to change rates, that was kind of a last minute understanding of the benefits of that agreement that was being signed, that we could shape our demand profile. And because we could shape our demand profile, shifting costs more towards the summer months when we need the water supply, that means less money was going, less outflow during the winter months. And so we were able to save a couple million dollars here and there on interest earnings because we could keep that money rather than having equal installments. And so it's a little bit different. So we still have the equal installments for the actual cost of water from IID, but the delivery of the water, the exchange component of that is based on the delivery of that. And so we're looking at doing that, and it's based off the 200, it's based on the 50,000 acre feet that's being reduced as well. So it's an even lower number than we originally thought.
Yes, I just want to, yeah. In addition to the interest earnings, I think Director Heideman, pumping costs, right? Those are significant. We were bringing all of our water down into SANV and moving it because it was all in equal monthly installments. But I actually wanted, can we go back one slide? I just wanted to provide some perspective on the graphic. Maybe it's one more. It's the demand. There it is. Okay, so just want to perhaps point out the obvious, but this is what I hone in on when I look at this graphic. And certainly you should be looking at the center one here. The difference, the gap between the dotted red and the solid blue, we're above our contract supply line, as Director Myers pointed out. And so where's that water going to come from? We're going to manage our storage. We're going to manage local reservoirs, and we're also going to purchase MET water. And so I don't think that that's a bad thing. And I think I've said that before, because if demands were to drop, right, if we had two consecutive wet years like we did not too long ago, Metropolitan is a variable supply for us. They're a peaker supply, so we don't have to buy that water. It's there for us, and arguably it's cheaper, but less reliable. So that's why I think that we're in a good spot with this. As you move out to the back end of the graph and you see the solid blue below the dotted red, how we can move that in the future, whether it's next year or in the next several years, remember, we still have 30,000 acre feet worth of bandwidth, right, within this exchange, within the settlement agreement with Metropolitan. So presumably that red dotted line goes down even further with additional sales. And that's not accounting for whatever we're successful with on interstate transfers with desal water as well. So we've shifted everything as a result of these transfers, and we will continue to do that. I just wanted to add that perspective.
Director Paul.
Thank you for the opportunity to comment. So back on, you're talking about Metropolitan increasing their rate 6.2, and then also the increase in property tax. Do we know what that property tax increase, how that affected San Diego? What was the total cost to San Diego that's now the increase going to go to Metropolitan?
Yeah, great question. I don't have that.
I have the answer. Okay. So for every $1 million worth of assessed valuation, your property tax bill will go up $15. So that's proportional to the value of your home. If it's less.
Right. But so in total, are we like $36 billion or something?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So what's this total San Diego total?
I don't have that number in front of me. That's easy to find, though. We can get that for you today.
Great. Thank you.
Anybody else? I guess, needless to say, it's pretty complex. We have three basic tranches of water. One is the QSA water, 200,000 acre feet, the desal water, 42. And then we have the canal lining water, which is 77,700. It is the cheapest water we have. So we always want to do things to maintain our access to that water, even though it's not take or pay. You still want access to it because it's very cheap water. So the key is shedding the QSA water and ultimately some of the desal water so that we can always take advantage or take maximum advantage of our canal lining water as we move forward. So and I'm sure we'll have more discussions about this in the future. Anything else? Anybody else? Okay. We have some information items. The controller's report on the monthly financial activity, small contractor outreach and opportunities program, semi-annual report, and a board calendar. We have no closed session. And with that, we have no further business, and the ANF committee is now adjourned. Thank you.
We have imported water in five.